Session number 10814, real one.
Mr. Asher, real one. Could you tell me, first of all, please, how you became a sailor in the war, please?
I suppose, really, that the fact that I had been very interested in yachting, sailing generally, raced with my father before the war, meant that, not unnaturally, I, when I was called up, they asked me whether I wanted to be in the Army or the Navy or the Air Force, and I, not unnaturally, said the Royal Navy. I was actually called up. I received my calling up papers whilst I was on holiday down in a place called Foy with my mother and sister at the time. And the date of the enlistment notice was the 12th of July 1941. And it said that I had to report on Monday, the 21st of July 1941 at 10 a.m. at a place called HMS Ganges, Shotley, Harwich. My father was very helpful, and I caught the next train up to London and then down to Faygate, South Godston, where we live. And father arranged for me to have a railway ticket to Harwich, arranged for me to stay overnight in some little hotel at Harwich, and the next morning caught the ferry across from Harwich to Shotley. I must say it was an extraordinary experience for me, never having been to that part of the country before, and indeed never having any experience, of course, before of being involved in anything military.
How did you get on with your training at Shotley?
I found it very interesting, really. I was one of... we were all shepherded into divisions and in barrack rooms. If my memory serves me correctly, there were about 52 of us all together in this barrack room. Only one, having had a public school education, I was naturally used to the hugger-mugger of living close together with other people. There was only one other person who'd had a similar education to myself. The rest of the people came from different parts of the world. I remember there was quite a number coming from Scotland. And we had, looking after us, a petty officer, I forget his name now, who had been brought back from retirement, really. And he was responsible for teaching us some of the fundamental facts of sailing, of the Navy generally. And we had, obviously, courses. We had a lot of square bashing as well. And I can remember particularly there was one warrant officer there who used to wear these black leather gaiters, very similar. Obviously, he was a gunnery officer, Whale Island trained, and a strict disciplinarian. And we very quickly named him the Black Prince. I can remember marching up and down that blasted barrack square in the quite hot summer of 1941 until I was very, very thirsty and very, very tired, and I think most of us felt that perhaps the square bashing was rather overdone, particularly in my case, having been in the OTC at school before, so I knew something about marching up and down and going round in circles and things of that sort. The training itself in the at Shotley was given by petty officers and chief petty officers who seem to me, in retrospect now, as if they were living in the Nelsonian times. They really didn't know very much about what they were trying to teach us. It was they were, many of them, quite unqualified for the task of teaching young sailors the rudiments of the sea, in my opinion. And I remember on several occasions I was invited to take over to teach the classes some of the facts of sailing, of boats, of navigation, and not gunnery, because I'd never seen a gun like the guns we had in training there before. But at the end of the day, of course, we left and were appointed to different barracks, different main barracks. The main barracks being, of course, Chatham, Portsmouth, and Plymouth.
Could I ask you at this point what your experience of sailing had been before you were called up?
Before that, my father.
Since it's obviously relevant.
Yes, my father had built a 65-foot ketch in the mid-30s, and that was the first of the many yeomans. Incidentally, now it's recently built the Yeoman 28, so you can see how many there were. So I sailed and raced and cruised with him for those years before the war. Also, the year before the war, he had a 6-metre, which he used to race at Cowes and in the Solent generally. And on several occasions, I was with him as a crew, and on some occasions, actually skippering the boat during the racing, during the regattas immediately prior to the war.
So your knowledge of seamanship was in actual fact superior to those of some of the instructors?
Definitely, without any doubt. I don't think any of them really had anything like that experience before. Their experience, of course, was sailing in whalers and cutters, which we did, of course, and whilst some of them, of course, were reasonably competent, the majority of them really had little experience, or, as I said earlier, some of them had been brought back from retirement and perhaps lost some of their skill and their knowledge.
Now, I interrupted your narrative with you going off to your first barracks.
Yes.
But if we could jump ahead a bit to your joining Force H in October 1941, can you tell me how that came about?
Yes. The after HMS Ganges, the training place, I was sent to Chatham as a Chatham rating. And in October of that year, we were, I think about half a dozen of us, in fact, were detailed off to join HMS Lightning, which was, they said, based at Greenock. So we're all under the control of some leading seaman, his name I really can't remember, went up to Greenock by train. I shall never forget that train journey. It was a long, tedious and dirty journey to Glasgow, and then from Glasgow out to Greenock, only to be told that Lightning had left the day before and was round at Rosyth, Rosyth being on the other side of the country, of Scotland. So we all went across, by train, to Rosyth, only to be told that Lightning had never, in fact, actually arrived at Rosyth and went to Scarpe Flow. So back, but she would be returning to Greenock within a day or so. So back we went to Greenock, and I must say I was very pleased to at last see the good ship fleet destroyer Lightning there at that time. Lightning's role really was one of escorting convoys from north of Scotland down to Gibraltar. I must say my first experience in HMS Lightning was pretty terrifying, really. I wasn't very well. The movement of a fleet destroyer, particularly in Atlantic in those months, not very pleasant. However, after a day or so, one recovered, or most of us recovered, and one could perform one's duties, which of course were very considerable in those days. My action station was a 4.7-inch gun turret. HMS Lightning was one of the first, in fact the first destroyer flotilla to have completely enclosed gun turrets. Most of the other, in fact all the other destroyer flotillas had gun shields. I think without any doubt that one of the reasons I'm wearing a hearing aid now is because in those days one had no protection whatsoever, and the crack of a 4.7-inch gun when you're in the turret is very quite considerable.
What was your role on the
front? Oh, very menial role. We had a central hoist which brought up a cartridge and a projectile. They had to be laid into a tray And my job was taking out the projectile and putting it in the tray. The chap behind me was taking out the cartridge case, brass cartridge case, and putting that in, and then that the gun captain did the rest. The actual tray came over, a ram pushed the two pieces into the actual gun itself, and the cry went up to the control tower, number one gun ready, or whatever the cry happened to be. And as soon as that happened and we were ready to fire, off we went.
Were you impressed with the efficiency of the working of the gun turret?
Yes, I was very impressed. It was something I'd never ever seen before. It was hydraulically controlled. Everything seemed to work remarkably well and efficiently too. And from an engineering point of view, I think it was something of a masterpiece, so far as I was concerned. And I think even today one would say the same thing. I'm not an engineer, but I would have thought it would have been very difficult indeed to do anything better than that. It's interesting, the only high-angle anti-aircraft gun that we had, because whilst these could be used against aircraft, they obviously had a limited elevation. The only high-angle anti-aircraft gun that we had was amidships, and that was a 4-inch gun built in 1914, which I thought was... I wonder where they found that on the scrap heap. It worked, and it fired. I don't think it actually brought down any aircraft, but it must have frightened the enemy, I'm quite sure of that.
Can you tell me more about Lightning, what she was like to live and work on?
Yes, we were, obviously, as sailors, all in one mess or the other. The duties were, I wouldn't say particularly onerous. The only unpleasant task that I had to perform, which one took it in turns to deal with, was the high-sounding title of Captain of the Heads. That means cleaning out the lavatories. I must say, I didn't warm very much to that job. However, it was a job that had to be done. The other job really was every few days one had to assist the leading hand or one of the senior, no, not the leading hand, one of the senior able seamen with several badges on his sleeve, meaning years of service, assisting him with the preparation of the food for the mess. The food was plentiful. Not particularly pleasant in many respects. I remember one awful thing we kept on having time and time again, which nearly must have made me lose a lot of weight, and that was sheep's hearts. I'm not very good on things like that, but most of the time the food was good and wholesome. One's companions were by and large very pleasant and cheerful people. And I think we all got on very well together. I can remember the leading hand, as soon as we arrived, saying, "Now, look here, chaps," he said, "there are three things that you mustn't discuss on the lower deck." So someone said, "Well, what are they, chief?" So he said, "One is religion, the other is politics, and the other is women." So a voice in the back said, "Well, what the bloody hell else is there to talk about then?" That amused me, and I shall never forget it. And of course, he's quite right. The last thing one wants to do is to start talking about politics because you're a socialist or I'm a socialist or he's a communist. And when one's working together and fighting the enemy, one ignores all those things. I don't give a damn, even today, you know, whether someone's black or someone's white or someone's a Catholic or a Protestant or a Hindu. It doesn't worry me at all. If he or she is a nice, pleasant sort of individual, I'll get on with them. I don't ask, you know, questions like that. So that was a good thing. So far as women are concerned, well, that's one will leave that in advance. Working in Lightning was great fun. We went down, we'd made a couple of runs down to Gib and back again, and then we were based in Gibraltar, where the only fresh vegetables we had there were Spanish onions, and quite frankly, I never want to see another bloody Spanish onion in my life. I've filled up with Spanish onions. We had a lot of trips out into the Mediterranean, escorting aircraft carriers, flying off aircraft to relieve Malta. That we did with the aircraft carrier Argus, the aircraft carrier Eagle, and more latterly with the aircraft carrier Ark Royal. And on one particular beautiful sunny afternoon, when we were literally in sight, one could just see the mountain of Gibraltar, a torpedo struck and crippled the Ark Royal, and I shall never forget that. And she heeled over quite rapidly. The aircraft, some of the aircraft were able to get off, but obviously the increased heel meant that the rest were incapable of flying off, which was a great sadness. And during the course of the night we learned that in fact she had sunk. Several photographs were taken, which I've given to Dr. Dowling, as I think you know, and it's interesting that many years later, when the company that I work for was setting up a business in Germany, one of us, the senior sales manager in point of fact, was an ex U-boat commander. And so, you know, one talks as one does about business, but every now and again one talked about other sorts of things. And I think I must have said, well, what was your experience, Werner, during the war? And he was captured in the South Atlantic. But he said, when I mentioned the Ark Royal, the sinking, he said, after a pause, he said, my very good friend, whatever the hell his name was the commanding officer of the U-boat that sank the Ark Royal. And I said, well, that's very interesting, and explained all about it, and passed over some copies of the photographs that I had been given of the sinking. And he had never seen those before. All he had ever seen, of course, was the Ark Royal and the chaps like ships like Lightning rushing around, dropping depth charges all over the place, trying to kill him without any success, from the other end of the periscope.
How far away from the Ark Royal were you?
Oh, within, I suppose, at the time, possibly a mile at the time of the actual torpedoing. But several other destroyers went alongside. Well, no, I think one went alongside, one or two anyhow. There are these photographs that show that, to take off the survivors. In fact, no lives were lost whatsoever. The only loss, of course, was a good ship, Ark Royal, and lots of aircraft, which we could ill afford in those dark days.
What was the mood on board the Lightning when you
saw... Oh, whoa. I mean, I'd never seen a capital ship like that die. Not that I actually saw it die, but I mean to be until much later during the war, when there was more of that happening again in the Mediterranean. No, it was one of horror and determination to kill the blasted U-boat. How she managed to get through the screen, no one will know, but except the chap concerned. And I expect someone in Germany has been interviewing him like you're interviewing me and finding out just what did happen, which I think is... you know, it could be quite fascinating. Is there any exchange? This shouldn't perhaps be recorded. Is there an exchange between you and them as to what goes on? I mean, could you ring up your counterpart and ask him really what did happen?
No, but I'm hoping to go to Germany to do some interviews, so no. Maybe I'll find some U-boat people.
Yeah.
Once you're on Lightning,
yes.
Did Lightning have any successes against U-boats?
No. A few successes against aircraft. Because, as you can imagine, going halfway to Malta, the Germans and indeed the Italians were not going to allow us to get very close, as is obvious. Without any degree of success from an underwater point of view, aerially, I can't recall precisely what successes we had, but we certainly had some successes against aircraft. After the Mediterranean, we went into the Atlantic on several occasions, and we escorted the Prince of Wales with Churchill on board when he had his meeting, you will recall, with Roosevelt. And we went there and went on, and we went on to Norfolk, Virginia, calling in at Bermuda. We had Christmas Day 41 in Bermuda. I never forget that. Lovely, warm, balmy day. sun shining. Norfolk, Virginia was cold. We then came back to Bermuda and then straight up after fueling there to Newfoundland, where, as you can imagine, it was many degrees of frost.
This was which month?
This would be January 41. Christmas 41 in Bermuda. New Year's Day 41-42 in Norfolk, Virginia, and then up to, and then straight up to Newfoundland. From Newfoundland back to Scotland, and then from Scotland down to Gibraltar again, escorting an enormous convoy, which we had no knowledge as to where it was going, and then from there to Freetown, Freetown to Cape Town, Cape Town to Durban, and we were at the occupation of Madagascar in the, when was it, I suppose, early spring. It must have been, yes, the early spring of 42. We were there for a few weeks in a place called Diego Suarez. And incidentally, somewhere I have some little documents, some little pieces of paper that were dropped by aircraft on the population of Diego Suarez, in French, of course, asking them, suggesting that they should surrender and be kind and friendly to the occupying forces. That was interesting, really. We were there, as I say, for a few weeks in Diego Suarez.
What was so interesting about it? Any action?
None at all. Absolutely none at all. No, we just went straight in. I think there were a few shells fired and things like that, but by and large the troops moved in, and Madagascar, well, the more northern part, Diego Suarez, was occupied completely and utterly. For how long, I don't really know, but anyway, that was all part of the campaign. After that, Lightning went up to Seychelles Islands, my first ever sight and smell of a tropical island, never to be forgotten. We refueled off Victoria, and can still see it quite clearly, the statue of Queen Victoria, the clock there, quite extraordinary. Anyway, we then went on from there to Ceylon, and I left Lightning then due to come back to England to go to King Alfred, HMS King Alfred, the officers' training place.
Just before you leave Lightning,
yes.
Did you get a chance to fire the 4.7 at any surface ships?
No, not at all.
So it was just used by you for anti-aircraft?
For anti-aircraft purposes, yes, only.
So you never came across the Italian Navy in the Mediterranean?
No, they kept well out of the way. More of that a little later in my career with as Flag Lieutenant to Admiral Willis. So, can I lean back? Is that all right? Like that? So, having left Lightning, I then to come back, the orders were to board about a 4,000 ton freighter. It was a freighter. I'm trying to think of the line. It was a thing called the, not the Altmark, but Ekmar. I think it was called Ekmar. Funny old thing.
E-K-M-A,
I believe. It was the... Anyhow, you'll realise in a moment why perhaps I don't remember it very well. About halfway there, I was standing up, we were all given duties to perform on the way from Ceylon to Bombay. I had the most excruciating stomach pains and was carried below because I just couldn't walk, and I was diagnosed as having dysentery. So I spent the rest of the voyage in the sick bay, and then I was carted ashore and spent about a month in hospital and a sort of recuperation place in Bombay, and out just outside a place called Parley Hill, recovering from this ghastly disease, which I wouldn't wish upon my worst enemy. Eventually, having recovered, there were quite a number of us in Bombay at the time, the Prince of Wales and the Repulse having been sunk, the quite a number of the survivors had congregated in Bombay, and we came back to England in a boat called the Strathairn to Glasgow, with a few civilians, but there were a few Italian. That's right. We picked up a few Italian prisoners of war in Durban on the way back. And they were all under guard, of course, although nothing much could have happened with them except mutiny, I suppose. Anyway, we came back, I had a bit of leave, and then went to that great establishment called HMS King Alfred at Hove.
Tell me what kind of an establishment it was, for those people who don't know?
Yes, to actually find one's way there, one had to have a certain rudimentary, really, examination and things of that sort. And then we went before those who passed that and arrived in the place, went before a selection board. The board consisted of, I think there was an admiral and a captain or two, and anyway, senior officers, who spent about a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes, I suppose, interviewing us, asking us what educational qualifications we had, obviously what our experience had been in the lower deck, and what we thought we might do to make some contribution to the war effort. And anyhow, I was successful in passing that and started my course at King Alfred, which is today the King Alfred complex at Hove, and now is that there's a swimming pool and an underground car park. That all been swimming pool had been boxed in. The underground car park had been converted into cabins and dormitories, which is where we lived. And every day we'd get up bright and early, have divisions, and attend the various courses, just like being back at school again. Navigation, seamanship, torpedo training, engineering, ship handling, flag recognition, all the various things that one would require in later life in the Navy. Again, one had an examination after a few weeks of that, and if one was successful, one went to Lancing College, which had been taken over by the Navy. I again was fortunate enough to go there. That was just like going back to school again, literally. Comfortable and very pleasant, meeting again a lot of very nice people, some of whom I still keep in touch with, although not very many, I'm afraid to say. That all went quite well. Again, one passed out, or one didn't, as the case may be, and then came back to Hove,